Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, FM and AM New York, and WNYC.org. A little confusion before the news, as you may have noticed when we played the wrong clip, to promote Jim Gilliam, the web guru, on leaving Jerry Falwell's Liberty University and finding something more high-tech to believe in.
We are the leaders of this new religion. We have faith that people connected can create a new world. Each one of us is a creator, but together we are the creator.
So we will talk to Jim Gilliam about the creator, that is, all the people contributing to the internet, coming up later this hour. Right now, how do you quench the thirst of a billion people? It's kind of like the movie Chinatown, but in China and on a much larger scale. So because the Yellow River in northern China is too polluted to supply water, they're going to try to divert 6 trillion gallons of water every year, hundreds of miles north from the Yangtze River to Beijing and other northern cities. This is called the South-North Water Diversion Project. And think of it this way. It'd be like diverting the Mississippi River to serve New York City, Boston, Washington, D.C., and the whole Northeast, but for like 400 million people. Oh, and they're in the middle of the worst drought in 50 years. This project is not universally loved in China, as you might imagine. Imagine if they tried it here. So joining me to explain the politics of water in China, why they're attempting the seemingly impossible feat, and why we should all be paying attention because it matters outside their borders, are two guests. Upmanu Lal, professor of earth and environmental engineering at Columbia University, director of the Columbia Water Center, and Christina Larson, contributing editor at Foreign Policy Magazine. She joins us from China. Welcome to both of you to WNYC. Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Jim.
And Christina, by way of context, how precarious is the water situation in the north?
Well, it's been bad for many years. Early this year was a really terrible situation. You had massive amounts of farmland harvests that died, and some of the state-run newspaper reported that the price of some key vegetables had gone up 10% in a week. Because crops were dying. I'm talking about crops as something, you know, that affects food prices, to give you a sense of how water ripples through so many aspects of Chinese society. But you know, to talk about the not only the Yellow River in the north, but the Yangtze River in the south, which traditionally has more water, so we in the Chinese government have thought, for a period of about a week, barge traffic in the middle of the Yangtze River was cut off entirely because the water level was so low, due in part to the drought. To put that in perspective, this river carries 80% of China's river freight. So imagine if 80% of the highways in the U.S. were put out of commission by a weather condition. You know, those are just some small ways to visualize the impacts of the water situation in China right now.
Incredible and pretty scary. And I wonder how people in China are reacting to the huge, massive scale of this water diversion project. I'm sure our listeners' eyes were popping out a little bit when I said it would be like diverting the Mississippi River to serve New York, Boston, Washington, D.C., and the whole Northeast. Do people in China have a sense of the scale of it, and how do they feel about it?
Well, the project was something that, well, whether or not it was dreamed up by Mao or dreamed up later, everybody likes to find quotes from Mao in the 1950s to say this was when the vision for such and such began. But the project has been in the works, if not for Mao, then for many years. There's 3 legs of it, which would transport water, as you said, from the Yangtze River in the south to the Yellow River in the north. The first of those legs was actually completed before the Beijing Olympics. Beijing is, you know, the capital of China, and it's built, you know, in what would otherwise be you know, close to a desert. It's a really dry part of the country. So the first leg of this transfer project was completed. There's two more legs that are being planned. About 150,000 people were moved for the construction of the middle leg. And the final leg in the west is really very controversial because it would go through mountains. And I actually talked to an independent geologist named Yong Yang, who had been doing some investigation about, forget the social costs, just the sort of viability of the plan. And he's really concerned, among other things, that the plans, at least on paper, would aim to divert more water than is actually in the river, in the Yangtze River at certain times of the year. So for people who've had an eye on the project, like him, for a long time, there's a lot of doubts. Again, as with Three Gorges Dam, they aren't so much ideological doubts about the project the way that, you know, sort of, I guess, debate sometimes about the early dams in the U.S. Mm-hmm. There was a sense of, you know, the desire to sort of protect nature, protect ecosystems. People in China are really practical. They know they have to make a lot of hard choices. There's a lot of anxiety about the water transfer project because people think it might not work, and it might destroy more than it enables.
Professor Lal, is the Yellow River polluted because of the massive development and urbanization that's been going on in China?
In most of the developing world, what we see is that these rivers are getting severely depleted and polluted. And the depletion, of course, increases the concentration of contaminants in there because there's not enough water to dilute them. So even in the Yangtze River, the level of pollution is quite spectacular.
I'm sure you've seen the movie Chinatown. That was a fictionalized version of the Owens River Diversion Project in California, which essentially created Los Angeles. That project destroyed some lakes in California. What are the potential environmental effects of this diversion project in China? Christina was getting at a few of them, I think.
The main issue that you see, you know, is the compounding effect of these things. If you look at the Yangtze River Basin as it was, below Yichang or Wuhan, this was one of the great floodplains in history. In fact, if you look at the history of the 20th century and you count the total number of human lives lost to floods and droughts, that is the region which dominates worldwide statistics. You know, if I remember correctly, it's about 3 million people in the 20th century died from the river. The Three Gorges Dam was articulated as a flood control project, even though the thing most people hear about is the amazing hydropower generating capacity. So what has happened since then is that as rapidly after the dam was completed, the area which was a traditional floodplain has been marshaled into agriculture. So what comes after that is that you have much higher nutrient and pesticide loadings into the river than ever before. And the flow in the river is regulated to be lower, or at least the flushing mechanism has been removed. Then midstream in the river, before it reaches the sea from going further downstream from Yichang, you have several lakes that are somewhat connected with the river. These lakes had fisheries that supported the local population. Those have been decimated. So locally, you know, the utilization of the river mechanics have changed and the loading of pollutants have changed. And what used to be a river dotted with sailboats and fishing boats in the 50s today essentially has barges and traffic moving most of the goods, as you alluded to earlier.
That's interesting because also, one of Christine was talking about Mao quotes, which may or may not have started this once upon a time. And I read that one of them is, water in the south is abundant, water in the north scarce. If possible, it would be fine to borrow a little, said Mao in the 1950s. But the south no longer has an abundance of water, right? They've experienced the worst drought in 50 years. Does the Three Gorges Dam have something to do with the drought?
Well, actually, the dam is intended to solve some of the problems associated with droughts. The droughts on the Yangtze are spectacular, as are the floods, and there's a long history of both drought and flood incidents. In fact, I was in China last year and visited Three Gorges, and it was rather low, and this was in June. By July, it was full, and they were worried they might lose the dam. The 1500s and 1600s were marked by perhaps the most extreme floods and droughts in the history of China, much more so than, you know, what we are experiencing lately.
Christina, both the Three Gorges Dam and this diversion project are controversial. People say it's rural people sacrificing for the rich urbanites. Gosh, don't we have the same debates over things in this country? An anti-dam activist, Dai Qing, was arrested back in 1989 and spent a year in maximum security prison for publishing a book-length expose on the problems the dam would cause. He's similarly opposed to the diversion project, I've read. Officials are now acknowledging that these projects are risky. What is the strength of the opposition to these projects? In fact, you know, from watching China over recent years, it seems to me that if there is an active democracy movement around China, that it is usually spurred by environmental concerns out around the country.
Well, you raise a lot of really good issues. There is a grassroots environmental movement in China. I would separate that from a democracy movement. In 1994, there was a legal change that allowed the first NGOs to register in China. And the first one was a group called Friends of Nature. And since then, for various reasons, one being that the environment is generally seen as less controversial than some other issues like religion or human rights or democracy, and also just because of the personal connections that people became leaders in the environmental movement, there are more grassroots NGOs in the environmental space than in any other today in China. So that, you know, on the one hand, is a really sort of encouraging thing. To what extent those groups have the ability to impact or change government policy for big projects like this is definitely another kind of an issue. Dai Qing, as you mentioned, she was a journalist who in the 80s had gone around collecting input from experts about what the intended or expected impacts of Three Gorges Dam would be. And then she took these findings and compiled them into a book called Yangtze, detailing some of the expected problems. And for this, as you mentioned, she was put in maximum security prison. Today, there's a little bit more openness, in terms of being able to criticize projects. Apparently, one of the state-run newspapers tallied 100,000 plus comments on the micro-blogging site, sort of like a Twitter of China called Weibo, of people sort of saying that the dam had exacerbated water shortages this summer. So that, in some degree, there's more openness in terms of conversation about problems. But in terms of actually impacting the big decisions, I mean, this is very much a top-down run country, and the government doesn't feel like it needs to ask approval for anything. So, I don't see there, I think on the one hand, it's an interesting and encouraging sign that the State Council, as you mentioned, in the last month released a statement acknowledging serious problems with Three Gorges Dam. Whether that bit of humility will make them more cautious about the north to south water the south to north water transfer project, one might hope so, but I really haven't seen any indication that would be the case. Something I might add is, if you don't do this project, right? I mean, to sort of spin this from the government's point of view, what else do you do? Well, what environmentalists and others answer is you need to get really serious about conservation. You need to stop having industry and farmers take water from the Yangtze, or probably from the Yellow also, in a rather unregulated fashion. You need to stop using unlined agricultural irrigation ditches that, you know, allow a lot of water to seep into the soil. You need to do all sorts of these kinds of measures. The government is run by people who are engineers, and they think like engineers, and engineers like to design big engineering projects to fix problems. So I think that's kind of where the impasse is.
We have a few minutes left talking about one of the biggest development projects in the history of the world, in China, where they're going to try to divert 6 trillions of gallons of water per year, hundreds of miles north to Beijing and other northern cities, what they call the South North Water Diversion Project, compared to diverting the Mississippi River to serve New York City, Boston, Washington, D.C., and the whole Northeast, can you imagine? And for 400 million more people over there, talking about it with Christina Larson, contributing editor at Foreign Policy Magazine, and Columbia University water expert Umanu Malu. Umanu Lal. And Professor Lal, before we go, what are the stakes for the rest of the world? Is the international community watching this project because it has potentially significant implications for the global economy? Like, if China can't support its ever-growing urban populations, and if it ends up ruining its farmland or maybe even having to import water, that affects basically everyone in the world, right?
Yes. I mean, the thing people have to keep in mind is that the actual consumption of water by different sectors in a country like China is dominated by agriculture. So it's a question of, can China feed itself? You know, that's paramount. The diversions we are talking about are for urban supply in the north. And as Christina points out, if they had improved conservation, reuse, and so on, much of those issues could actually be addressed. But what would be more difficult for China to address is the total agricultural productivity if their population continues to increase, which they're actually doing a pretty decent job on historically, in terms of, you know, compared to countries like India, for example. But the issue globally that we have to watch for is that what China is doing in the recent years is that to meet projected food needs, it's spreading out to Africa, to South America, to start acquiring grains, to acquire soy and other products. So in essence, they are exporting their water issues globally, and that has an impact on food prices globally, and that has an impact on environmental issues globally.
All right. Well, something fascinating that I'm sure most of you did not know about before, to watch as we continue to cover the world, not just our immediate region. It's the South North Water Diversion Project planned for China. And I want to thank Umanu Lal, Professor of Earth and Environmental Engineering at Columbia University, Director of the Columbia Water Center, and Christina Larson, Contributing Editor at Foreign Policy Magazine. Thank you both so much. It's been fascinating.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, web guru Jim Gilliam on leaving Jerry Falwell's Liberty University and finding something, let's say, more high-tech to believe in. And then we will conclude today with an appropriate eulogy for the creator or co-creator of Mad Libs, who has passed away. Yes, you will help us write it. Stay tuned.